So, could you tell us who you are and what your story is in terms of having had Parkinson's and being able to recover?
My name is Nathan Zackheim. I was born in California in a rural atmosphere. I'm 64 years old, I have passed 64 years so far, and I got Parkinson's somewhere in the range of started around 1980 with what they call pre-Parkinson's symptoms. In other words, one of the reasons why Parkinson's has, at least perhaps until recently, been hard to diagnose is that the pre-Parkinson's symptoms are often misinterpreted as this, that, and the other thing. And that was, of course, in my case, too. They sent me here and they sent me there for neurology and psychology and this and that, you know, but I didn't have any, you know, after a while, the shaking told it all. But so from 1980 to 1985, I was developing Parkinson's, and then after 1985, I began to shake very violently for the next couple of years. Unable to sleep. I mean, completely ruined. My business was finished. Everything was finished. Just couldn't do anything. I think I was around 40 at that time. I was born in 1943, so what happened is that I was on my way to India for unrelated reasons, partly preparing myself to die because I realized it was getting worse beyond imagination and I didn't know if I could go further. So I was getting ready to go to India. Someone serendipitously handed me a business card and said, go to this man, he can cure you. I didn't think much of it. But I did go to India, and I spent some time there. It was a very difficult experience. Then at the very end, my card fell out of my passport where I'd stuffed it, and I decided at the last moment to visit Dr. Mukesh Paneri, and I did. I went down by train to Ahmedabad, which was excruciatingly difficult because I couldn't sit still for a moment. So on this 18-hour train ride, I was walking back and forth with all my luggage, at least 100, 200, 300, 400 times. It was just almost unbelievable. But anyhow, got there, saw him, and he looked at me and said, oh, you have Parkinson's disease. He sort of giggled and said, he was like 35 years old at the time. He was giggled and said, oh, this is not curable in the West. And I said, okay, inside I was like, oh, yeah, tell me something I don't know, okay? And then I was very bitter at that time because of the disease. And then he said, but my medicine can cure you. He looked at me archly with a big smile on his face. So I said, oh, my goodness, okay, you can cure me. So I didn't think anything of that either. So I bought some medicine, and I traveled up to Singapore. Yeah, I was traveling through Singapore and then Tokyo. I didn't take the medicine. It was just agonizing. I was meeting all these celebrities and stuff like that, and I was just totally non-functional. What happened is that I came back to Los Angeles and I was supposed to take ginger juice, so I got a coffee grinder, like brown coffee grinder, makes, one pot of coffee sort of thing. And I used that for grinding ginger and squeezing it through a cloth. And I had honey, jar of honey. I had a briefcase dedicated to all of this. Honey, coffee grinder, mortar and pestle for mixing the medicine, and other medicines that I had to take with milk and stuff like that. That was back then in the late 86.
So he gave you different pouches of herbs to bring back? Is that what you actually physically carried back with you?
I carried back little packets of medicine.
With instructions on how to take them and when to take them?
Oh, yes. Uh-huh. Yes. Yeah, well, the medicine was easy. You just mix it with honey and then lick it up. The ginger juice was a little more difficult, but I ground up the ginger and squeezed it through a nylon cloth, so it worked fine.
Uh-huh.
And there were some other silver-coated pills and some digestive pills and stuff like that. And I managed it very well, and I was very strict with the diet that he gave me. I was not allowed to eat any nightshade plants like potatoes and tomatoes and okra and eggplant and stuff like that.
You were not able to eat those?
Not able to. So I was really no green peas. I was really way down the list in terms of things that I could eat. So I basically just ate khichdi, which is like mung beans, rice, vegetables, ghee, and spices, you know.
Uh-huh.
So I ate that for 2 years. But the effect was good. And like Linda, I began to show symptoms of improvement very, very soon after taking the medications.
Meaning a day, 2 weeks?
Oh, no, weeks.
Weeks, uh-huh.
Yeah. I began to show symptoms, and after about a year, most of the symptoms had reduced. And then after close to 2 years, less than 2 years, the symptoms were completely gone, and I stopped taking the medicine. And I had no recurrence from that time onwards. I've been free from Parkinson's since, like, 88, so it's been like 20 years.
And during that period of time, were you doing other things other than the diet and the herbs to be able to get some relief from your symptoms?
Was I doing anything else? Well, I never took any of the doctor medicine, you know, the Sinemet or anything like that. I completely avoided taking that sort of stuff. I don't even take aspirin if I can help it. So, I mean, I didn't take any medication. The diet was there. The medicine was there. As far as I can say, that was it. You know, I was not allowed to drink alcohol or take any drugs. Not that I was doing that anyhow, but and other medications. I was on a very strict vegetarian diet.
And some people are reporting that exercise has been helping them. Were you doing that during this period of time, too?
Well, I didn't go to the gym, but I'm a very, very active person.
So you were on the move all the time anyway.
Oh, yeah, I'm always on the move. I'm 40 years old, and I was strong as a bull, you know, so I was rushing around doing stuff as much as I could. But with the Parkinson's, I really became diminished.
And I think you mentioned that a lot of the work that you were doing was being challenged. So after you were able to recover, were you able to go back full steam into doing work and other kind of activities?
Well, I did eventually, yeah. But it was like I was actually on SSI for quite a few years. I really had no money. Then around 89 or 90, it took me a long time to bring my career back up. Partly because I lost contacts, partly because I wasn't in the habit of working anymore. And there are a whole bunch of reasons, you know. But in the end, I not only got my career back, but I was doing much better than I had been before. You know, back in the 1980, I was making something like 100, you know, back then. I wasn't very ambitious, but my field happened to open up in areas which were surprisingly lucrative for my field, which is art restoration. So I was making like 150 grand a year back in 1980, which was worth more than it is now for sure. But then after 1990, I was like, you know, four, five, six times that amount. You know, it was really quite amazing.
Well, this is an amazing story. What would you say to somebody who has just been diagnosed with Parkinson's?
What would I say to such a person?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the first and most significant thing I would say to someone with Parkinson's is get the Ayurvedic medicine from Dr. Panieri, who has 1,000 people under treatment and has cured close to 100 of them, I believe. Cured, meaning cured, final cured. How many people in various degrees of improvement? Nobody is not improving. Now, there are often people that didn't improve from the medicine. That turned out, one fellow, well, used to be at the, you know, the Hawaiian Hilton Village in Oahu as a band leader. And we brought Dr. Panieri over, and he stayed for weeks and stuff like that. And they paid for it, you know, and we couldn't figure out why the guy didn't get better. It turned out he was smoking pot, going out, getting drunk, and visiting hookers. This guy's in his 70s, okay? So I didn't know whether to slap him on the wrist or congratulate him. But anyhow, he didn't get better. I don't know if he ever got better or if he continued the medicine, but he died recently from a lot of other problems that he had.
Now, Are you then in contact with, or do you know many other people whose story is similar to yours, people who had Parkinson's and have been able to get relief from their symptoms?
I really don't, you know, because people call me, and I presume they get better eventually, but they seldom call me back saying, oh, I'm cured now, you know?
Interesting. Is there...
No, Dr. Panera is the person to talk to about that because he knows. You know, he knows all the people he's cured.
Right.
I might say he may not. Also, I think for the same reason, that people get cured and they don't bother to call back.
Right. They're better, so that's the end of the story. Do you have a website, or is there a way that you would like to open up the possibility of people connecting or having more conversations with you?
Well, I am, because to tell you the honest truth, I'm just a few months away from going to India again. My wife and I just spent 3 months in India. We're going to go to India, and we're planning to open up a $30 million World Parkinson Center there. And it's going to be a treatment area the way we have imagined it to be. It will be a place which will be basically not a hospital or clinic. Because for Parkinson's, it's a long-time cure. You don't really need a clinic, you know, or a hospital. We're going to create a resort, 16 acres of landscaped with swimming pools and horses and everything you might want, 200 cows for milk. And this is going to be a gorgeous five-star environment for people to go and essentially have a lifestyle change. You see, I didn't go to any resort or any clinic. I went to the doctor. Do you know how long it took for me to get my treatment from Dr. Panera?
No.
2 hours. Can you imagine? I went all the way from America, took a hellish train ride to Gujarat, to Ahmedabad, walked in the door. He took my pulse, looked in my eyes, looked at my tongue, said, handed me the medicine. I handed him some money. I went back to America, and I didn't see him again until I was completely cured. I kept sending him money, and he kept sending me medicine. So I didn't need the Parkinson's Center. But the whole problem is that in the last 20 years, he should have cured millions. But he's only cured, you know, a few. Why? Because people either don't know about it, don't trust it, don't know money. You know, Ayurveda is becoming much more prominent now. But back then, you know, Ayurveda, nobody even knew how to pronounce it, you know?
Right.
Deepak Chopra had not made it famous. So the idea of the center is people can go there, and what they're really going to get, well, they're really going to get, as you put it, exercise. They're going to have, exercise regimens, gymnasiums, and physical therapy, but they're also going to have Ayurvedic massage with all sorts of, you know, herbal-based oils with very, very highly skilled Ayurvedic masseurs because Parkinson's produces tension and Parkinson's produces all the shaking and fatigue and stuff like that. So I was continuously fatigued because my body was shaking 24/7. You know, we're going to provide relief in the form of the spa. Besides, it'll be fun. You know, people can go there and get a really great massage. What will happen then is that they will go undergo a lifestyle change. So understand that each one will be prescribed their own diet. It'll all be Apple computers all over the place. In other words, everyone will have a little card, and on that card will be a barcode, and you scan the barcode. He goes to the snack bar and says, give me this, and the guy says, well, you can have this, but you can't have that. You know?
Great.
We're going to have a lot of interactive activity between the United States and India, too. So when people do go back, they will be constantly able to deliver their symptoms, deliver their conditions, deliver their reactions, and have prompts coming by email to them from India when they're supposed to be checking in and when they're supposed to be, I don't mean checking into the facility, but checking in, meaning like, how are you feeling, how's your pulse, how's your blood pressure, and stuff like that. And we've even gone so far as to think that part of this lifestyle change would involve us hiring RNs in India, training them especially, and then sending them across to the United States so that they can empty out the liquor cabinet into the trash bin give the deep freeze a decent burial and do all that stuff to clean up the home and set it up for the diet that they have been prescribed at the center, plus all the things they should be eating, like juicers for juice. And, you know, in other words, the RN would come in and just do a makeover of their lifestyle so that they don't have to struggle with it themselves, but they would actually just be done. They'd pay, you know, a couple grand a month or something for the maid to be there, I mean, the RN to be there for 3 months. And then the RN goes back and the people hopefully fly on their own volition after that.
That's a great idea.
And it's really the lifestyle change will make the cure very much faster.
Uh-huh.
And basically, every time there's been a slow, difficult cure with a lot of complaints about the treatment or the medicine, it turns out they're pulling some nonsense behind the back, you know.
Right, just like you explained earlier.
That's a pretty strict thing, but as far as I was concerned, it's, well, you know that Jack Benny joke, you know, that skit or whatever, Jack Benny. He's in an alleyway and a guy pulls out a gun in a striped shirt and a little mask, you know, pulls out a gun, your money or your life, he screams at him, you know. And he doesn't say anything, and he keeps rolling his eyes and stepping on one foot and the other. And they said, didn't you hear me? Your money for your life. Finally, Jack Benny says, yeah, I heard you. I'm thinking. You know, whether you'd rather have his money or his life.
Right.
Well, that's what the choice really is, you know, your money or your life. So people can pay the money, get the medicine, get cured, or they can die.
That's the choice. That's the bottom line. Well, so to be clear about this clinic, where will it actually physically be located in India?
Well, we have one location picked out with 80 acres of land. That's a guy's coming in as an investor. And I don't know what the status is exactly because I haven't been there in a couple of months, but he was looking at the idea of bringing his 80 prime acres in Ahmedabad, India, which is on the west coast of India, bringing the 80 acres as his contribution because that would be his investment instead of putting in cash.
Oh, I see.
And other people are coming in with other types of things, too.
So it's really being built now. And you is the plan to have this up and running in a couple of years, or what's the goal?
Well, I think that our goal is to have it running inside of 3 years. Yes. Once it's there, we're going to make it very, very available. And people can come and have beautiful rooms, you know, all sorts of handmade fabrics for the bedding and stuff like that. It's not like it's going to be just like a hospital, but they'll have hand-spun sheets and beautiful coverings and sculpture, first-class art. All the bells and whistles you would imagine in a five-star hotel and many, many more as well.
Oh, it sounds wonderful to me. So if people want to keep appraised of the progress of the development of this clinic, how would they be able to do that? Is there a way of being able to get this information from you?
Oh, absolutely. Anyone can call me. But the thing is, what we're going to be doing within the next 2 months is beginning to construct a website where we have architectural renderings of the tentative plans that we have right now, and really getting feedback from people as to how interested they actually would be in going to such a facility. Because before we build it, we have a lot of flexibility. Before we have a final design and build it, we have a lot of flexibility, and I just think it would be really great to get people to have input into the facility, because we may end up designing it much differently than we think.
Oh, that's a wonderful idea. And so do you want to give your phone number of how people could call you if they wanted to do that?
Sure. Well, the phone you're calling on is good, 213-840-9130.
And we could certainly put out on the information that we spread an invitation to people to contact you directly about this as well.
Yeah. Well, that's great. In my world, having gone through what I went through with the disease myself, relief is not where we're headed. We're talking about cure.
Right. Right.
But even so, I personally would not find much use for myself to be involved in this project if I was not absolutely certain that at least 75% or even 50% of the people will enjoy a full, complete recovery without future symptoms.
And could you summarize for people from just your own experience and observations of others, what is it that happens to others who do not recover, who are not able to feel better?
Oh, well, Dr. Panieri says 100%. I'm just saying what I'd be satisfied with. He doesn't... Anybody who gets better, well, Linda's partway cured. I would say she's... Linda, are you there? Is she there?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I'm there. I was on mute.
Oh. Okay, what would you say would be the degree on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being where you started, say...
On some days it's an 8 or a 9, and then some days it's like a 4 or 5.
Right. So she's still in the process of being cured.
Right.
And so she's...
I'm not as vigilant on the diet as you were, Nathan, either. I tend to have a martini now and then.
And you've also described, in terms of your own recovery, it's not exactly a smooth ride up. There are some rocky spots where you're feeling...
I didn't experience anything like that. For me, when my rocky spots were before I started taking the medicine. Uh-huh. After I started taking the medicine, I felt steady cure until I was cured. I think, you know, I mean, it's sort of hard to evaluate because when I was living alone and... I didn't really have any way to measure what was happening to me, you know? Well, Dr. Panieri's treatment, the treatment should really not take more than 3 years for complete cure. What goes wrong in the body? Why does the body start parking it?
Well, what I've come to the conclusion of is it, of course, varies depending on the person. So there are different primal causes that are going to generate the symptoms. But that one of the primary underlying issues that looks like is at play for many people winds up being significant stress and trauma in their lives.
Well, that certainly can do it.
Yeah.
What about the parking itself? Why does a person start shaking?
It's probably in large part due to an overload of all of those hormones that create the intensity in a person. So adrenaline and cortisol and all of the related other hormones.
That could well be the case. Mm-hmm. But would you like to know what the Ayurveda profession says on that topic?
Yes, I want to document all of that.
Yeah. He is saying that it's not a problem of the head, but of the digestion.
Yes, right. That's what we've begun thinking, too, is the nutrients aren't being digested as they should be.
Yeah, and what occurs is that the body produces toxins instead of nutrients.
And so what you have to do is help the body detox.
Well, yes, but the Ayurvedic system of doing that is to support the organ that does the proper work in the first place. It's sort of like when a person's ill, their breath can become sort of like foul. But that's not the case when they're healthy. So similarly, what we're talking about here is that some organ is not producing healthy elements that are meant to be transferred to the brain. In this case, gaseous elements that are meant to go up to the brain and enable the brain in a certain, the hollow part in the center of the brain, is supposed to be filled with nutritious, beneficial gases. Now, if those gases become polluted due to stress or injury or the things you've been looking at, they will become, the organ producing them will become produce contaminated substances, which then go on to cause a great deal of difficulty in the form of shaking because this corrosive material starts eating away at the part of the brain that produces movement and starts creating involuntary ones.
That makes good sense.
Yeah, most doctors would not agree, I think, that the problem is in the stomach. But
right.
In Ayurveda, practically speaking, all diseases are said to come
from the stomach. Right from the stomach. Yep.
Yeah.
Well, that's
that's the thing. The Dr. Panieri is, you know, not just a doctor that went to school. He's from a 600-year-old dynasty of Ayurvedic doctors from Rajasthan. They were, even 600 years ago, they were given a large tract of land on which they grow herbs by the king of Udaipur.
Interesting.
In appreciation for services rendered.
Interesting.
Yeah, so we're talking a lot of knowledge, a lot of medicine. They didn't learn to make the medicines from a book, but this is family recipes, as it were.
Yeah.
So it's not duplicatable, per se, in the ordinary sense of the word. You can't just go to any Ayurvedic place and say, hey, he's curing Parkinson's, can you? Maybe they can help, maybe they can't. People do come to Dr. Pineri who have been to other Ayurvedic doctors, and they did get some relief, but they didn't get any cure. And when they came to Dr. Pineri, they got cured.
Interesting. Oh.
And it's really, he also is a very proactive, creative, Thomas Edison-like doctor. He doesn't just go by rote, but he actually invents new medicines, too. Invent means, you know, recombining things that are known in a way which can be utilized in a new way.
Right.
So that's the basis. So our basis of our Parkinson's Center is really Dr. Pineri, not an abstract concept of Ayurveda where people can go to Ayurveda school and then they'll be competent to act. What we're really doing is sequestering and protecting the medicine. So we're going to create the medicines, create the formulas for the medicine, and manufacture the medicine, which can be manufactured in large quantities, you know?
That sounds like a fascinating...
But using, you know, only the herbs. We'll be taking on stockholders in a private stock company, but no one will be able to control the company except Dr. Pineri. They'll invest in it, but they won't have be able to say, now we're going to use cheaper herbs or something of that sort.
Right.
It has to be done right. So when the herbs are set up and the knowledge is there, the diagnostic tools are there, then, you know, after Dr. Pineri is no longer with us, this process can continue because there'll be the formula for the medications and the diagnosis and the treatment. Of course, with Parkinson's, the diagnosis is not difficult. If someone's shaking, you know what's going on.
Right.
But at the same time, and this happened with Linda also, is that when she was taking, she had some difficulty with her digestion, and Dr. Pineri had to adjust his medicine. So this is going to be always a situation where people require some adjustments
right.
to go on, you know?
Right.